Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. You know, if you've listened to this show before, you know my purpose here is to support people on their mindfulness journey. And that is being able to bring our full attention to the present moment without judgment. And one of the things I've been talking about lately is the relationship between those habits of mind that lead to mindless behavior, mindless eating, mindless television watching, mindless reactivity to what's happening in our lives, and the relationship between those habits of mind and racism. For whites specifically, how is it that a belief in white racial superiority has become deeply embedded in our consciousness? And how can we bring that belief to conscious awareness so that we can change it? If we want to unearth and change a deeply held belief, I think one thing we have to do is pay attention to how we feed our minds. What information are we consuming day in and day out? And one barrier I think whites have in particular is that we often have a very limited and therefore distorted information about and experience with Black Americans. So as part of my mindfulness journey, I want to use this platform to disrupt our habits of mind that reinforce white racial superiority. Disrupting those habits means feeding my mind and yours with counter narratives, with stories from Black Americans about their, in some ways, ordinary and in many ways, extraordinary lives. So my guest today is Courtney Hill. And you may remember that Courtney was on the show a few weeks ago. And he talked about his work as a videographer. He talked about his extensive international experiences, his work as a teacher in around the world, actually. And after the show was over, we were chatting and we realized we wanted to have a more explicit conversation about race. So Courtney, welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me again.
Well, it's great to have you here. As I mentioned before, you and I met when you were a student at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois, and I was on the staff there. And we decided to do this show because we want to have a difficult conversation. and I really appreciate you saying that you wanted to do that. Can you tell me, like, what made you say, Mary Angela, let's do this again?
I think I felt like after that conversation, which was a wonderful, like I said, thank you for having me on and giving me the opportunity.
Well, you know, I love talking to you. Yeah.
And so I felt like there were things that I might have been reserved on.
Okay.
Conversations that I typically hadn't had with anyone before. Mm-hmm. And comfortable as I am with you, I don't know why I couldn't be as full as I wanted to be, maybe, I think. Okay. And so I think I might have, I wouldn't say I danced around any of your questions, but I felt like I could have hit on the target a little bit better than I did.
Okay.
I really was hitting surface, and not just surface level. I think I went pretty deep, but I think I definitely could have done, you know, hit them a little bit harder.
Okay. You know, and one of the things we talked about, we did talk about some of your experiences abroad and how, and the role that your race and other people's perception of your race played in those interactions. And that was really, really revealing and helpful. But, we didn't really turn towards our own situation. And I think it's interesting what you're saying, because you and I've known each other for several years. We've talked about race before, but it is still a very tender topic. And so I appreciate that, I don't know, your careful consideration of these issues and your willingness to talk about them more freely with me today. So, but you know, because this is a kind of a tough spot and because this is what I do on the show, let's start with three deep breaths, shall we? Because we know that it helps clarity and focus and calmness, and that's how we want to feel to have this kind of conversation. So first breath, we're just going to pay attention to the sensation of the air entering and exiting our body. Second breath, we pay attention to any place we feel tension and relax. And then third breath, we're just going to set our intention for this moment. And mine is going to be open. I want to hear what Courtney has to say, and I hope you do too. So breath number one, just pay attention to the breath. Breath number two, relax. And breath number three, set your intention. Okay, thanks for doing that. Thanks for doing that with me, Courtney. So my guest today is Courtney Hill, a young man from Chicago, Illinois, a graduate of Knox College, alumni of the Fulbright program, spent 10 months in Malaysia teaching English, and a videographer and a teacher now, still working with a pod of fourth graders this COVID season in Chicago. So Courtney, I want to refer to a story that you told me a long time ago as kind of our jumping off point for this conversation. When early in our meeting, knowing each other, you told me about your study abroad experience in China. And you mentioned that when you were first there, almost immediately you noticed, and you were out in a fairly rural area of the country, is that right?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry?
I was in Beijing, and I was in a town that's maybe 2 hours or an hour away, but it was definitely less diverse or as global as a city Beijing is. This city was not on the same platform.
Yeah. And okay, so you tell me. So tell me about what happened, what you really noticed when you first were in that more, less cosmopolitan, less diverse area.
Even just a test to maybe how I can remember it, or maybe I've been in situations, but the fact that you remembered it before I did.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sitting here as like, when you told me about that story, I'm like, I maybe it's happened so many times that I don't think about it.
Oh, wow.
Is that it's just, especially, and maybe it's not the case of I do think about it, but when I'm not in the U.S., I'm not thinking about it as much. Or I am, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It feels like, it didn't register with me. And then I'm like, oh, I do remember, right? So
right.
Like, I have more of those experiences, but the more I dig up and think about them. But it was, we had just gotten to Beijing and we were settling in, and we took a trip to, like, it was a little adventure from studying. Like, we took a break from it, went out and went to the city called Tianjin. I think I said that right, I don't know. But it's like only like an hour away from Beijing. And so, when we were there, it was like a food festivals. It was like they had markets. They had things for sale on the street. It was just like it was a cool little city. And so little knickknacks. And so I remember I was like getting some food, and a man like took a photo of me as I was like taking a bite of the food. Like he had been standing there for a minute to the point where when I looked up, he had like flashed and it was kind of like nodded at me and then kind of just like looked at the picture to make sure it was like a good picture and walked away. I'm like, this dude just took a photo of me, right? So It was really random, and I don't think I thought about it as much, right? And I think as the time progressed of me being there, people would come up to me to start noticing it, like being on the train, different places of people like taking photos of me, like not explicitly, but like kind of like in the cut, like trying to like sneak a selfie. That's what I call it. Like they're trying to sneak us. That was the thing. Cause selfies were still starting to like really pop off, I guess.
Right.
People would try to sneak a selfie with me. And so me just being me, I would either, I kind of jumped in the photo. Like it was like.
Cause that's you.
Right. So that's just me though. Right. And so Like we would jump in the photo, or, you know, I take a photo of them back. Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh,
so
right.
A photo of you and we would laugh at it, whatever. And so people would come up and kind of get near me and kind of touch my skin. And like, and this is when I was in the more kind of not big city areas, because there is a decent African population in all over the world in Beijing. But when You get some of these more smaller cities or places where people are traveling to for the first time, like you can really tell if you're not from Beijing.
Right.
From the city and you're from some village way out, and you get out and you're like, oh, you know, so it's a shock. And I wasn't the only black person in my program, and there was another girl in the program who was not with it at all. Like She not.
It was troubling to her.
Definitely. Yeah. I totally could. It bothered her. People would just come up to her and touch her hair without asking if, would do this, similar things to both of us.
Right. You said they would hand you their babies.
That was something that was when I was on the Great Wall, like walking the Great Wall, like a family. I took a photo with a family.
Uh-huh.
And the mother like handed me the child.
Oh.
Like hold in the photo.
Right. Wow. Right? Total kind of, stranger.
My professor was like, at the time she was like, these people are not from this. Like they would, they're here for this and they probably might not ever come back to the city. So it's like the baby will at least be able to say, I've taken a photo with a black person before. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
That we might find not, like the things that we find novelty here that we take photos of.
Is, sure.
It's the same thing to a culture and a country that doesn't have these things.
Right.
Right. And I don't think, and to me, I realized that it was from a place of ignorance, but also more so of a place of not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they didn't know that it was, you couldn't, because there's like no rules in China. To a certain degree, there's like no sense of boundaries. Like if we can get really in detail about subcultured,
right?
The things that are accepted, the things that are not accepted, that can go on forever. And the list of unacceptable things that are accepted, it out trumps a lot of things.
Right.
But things for someone that's not native to the country that has to experience them in the country, mm-hmm. right? Right. These are things that I had to figure out, how am I going to deal with these experiences? Yeah. How am I? And so for me, I chose to embrace them. Mm-hmm. I took them as a moment of like, I wrote about it in my application of just like being vulnerable. Like, mm-hmm. and that was more so in my Fulbright application, but I didn't realize how I was really being vulnerable in that time period.
Absolutely.
I was like extremely vulnerable. I was like willing to let people, I'm holding people's, like no one in the US would just hand me that. If you didn't know me, just hand me your child's like a photo, right? So there was a lot of just like, it was curiosity, people. And the one thing being, and that was the cool thing, is like you say, where are you from? Chicago. And the limited English that anyone may speak, if you say Chicago, oh, Michael Jordan. Chicago.
Right.
That is the
magic word. Yeah.
Magic word. You say Chicago, people say Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls, and you have a friend. So that was something that was like, it connected me with a lot more people than I realized. And so,
when you told me that story, one of the things that really stood out to me about it was that almost instantaneous decision you had to make, which was essentially, how am I going to react to this? How is this going to have an impact on me or not? And so you turned it to an open-hearted, they don't know, first time. I mean, you've just got this, given us this great explanation of how these people were different from city dwellers, what this experience was like for them. And, you know, I hear the vulnerability and I also hear the open-heartedness in what you're saying. And one of the things you had said to me at the time was, you know, those same behaviors in the U.S. would not have been acceptable to you either, just as they were troubling to your classmate.
Right, right.
And so, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot that I think is very hard for whites to wrap their minds around is the dailiness of, so if you're in the, you know, you're a Black American living and working here in the United States back, you know, or your childhood, and you never know when someone is going to orient to you based solely on your race. Right. You know, and on the one hand, you know, it's inevitable, right? Because you're not naive and you've grown up here. And on the other hand, it can't always be predicted. And that's, keep thinking about, what does it take? So is that an accurate description, that it is both inevitable and unpredictable?
Never, like you have to always be like, I'm never not aware of who I am when I'm in the U.S. Right. Mm-hmm. And these things, and I don't know how much, should I go back into that international piece, but like, I didn't think about police weren't looking for me. You know, they probably for some, but like they weren't, I wasn't worrying about if I was being followed in the store. If mm-hmm. someone thought I had enough money to pay for something or not,
mm-hmm.
someone asking me why I was where I was,
mm-hmm.
if I, you know, I was never questioned, you know, yeah. I was treated like a, you know, like a celebrity to a degree,
mm-hmm.
you know, because especially and within the States, I think these are things that you have to, like, I'm never not aware of these things, mm-hmm. where I am, because I know I have to move a certain way, because I'll be perceived, and that's enough. That's taxed. Just having that mental capacity mm-hmm. is in Black people across the country, and it's nothing new by any means. It's mm-hmm. things people have been saying, and amongst Black people, amongst my friends, that we share amongst ourselves all the time, mm-hmm. and it seems like now it's like a thing to be talked about, like it's, right. and so. And it's either now or never, right? And so, but I'm kind of losing my train of thought right now.
That's okay. I don't know. Just because we're just chatting, right? So when's the last time you thought somebody reacted to you based on your race?
Probably last night, because I just took my hair out and I was walking out. It was probably like last night around 9 o'clock, walking down the street, mm-hmm. had my mask on, trying to be
right.
Someone looked at me and just like saw me coming and like crossed the street, like turned the block, looked at me and was like, oh, now I'm going to the side of the street. Mm-hmm. So it was like, you know, but these are things that is little as those, like those things happen in little ways, from someone grabbing their purse to moving it to another, checking that they have their purse, you know, or like someone kind of looking down or grabbing their phone real quick to make it look like, before having this small encounter, right?
Right.
But it
just passing you on the street.
Passing on the street, right? Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of white people, it may feel like by ignoring it, it's easier on both ends.
Mm.
But it's just as taxing, like I said, like I feel like I would love to know what is taxing as this is on Black people
mm-hmm.
in America that have to live either a dual life when they go into work, when they come home, or when they just live their life, period, and the way someone else reacts to them. It'd be interesting to see, like, the reverse of that, like a white person who is, like, that has to, like, is mental, as taxing as it is for me to mm-hmm. have to think about these things, I wonder what the reverse is of a white person going, man, I gotta act like I know what's going on, or the like, that's enough conscious thought that I have to, oh, let me take my phone out real quick. To not make eye contact with this person, so I don't offend them, and or I don't look like that. I don't, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
like
right.
That's just like it's fake, and so
it is fake.
But it's just as taxing as like if you're. I would say it's just as taxing as the same, but yeah. It's like you're thinking about it in a way that
right. Yeah, I think that's a good point. I've been thinking about as you're talking about. Yeah, what's my experience of that? I think. You know, one thing I've been doing, especially with COVID, is because of the masks, when my partner and I go for a walk in the morning, we often cross paths with people, white, Black, Asian, et cetera. And I try to always say hello because I think the masks are so dehumanizing. And because I don't want to be the white woman who looks away from the Black man who's crossing her path because she's afraid of him. And I don't want to look afraid. I just want to look But I also don't want to be the white woman who only says hello to the Black people, right? You know, so there is a little of that. And I appreciate, I think it's very kind of you to notice that there's some effort involved for whites. But of course, you know, the consequences are so different.
Right. And that's right? why you were, like, they're not the same, but
no.
It's like the same thought process that you have to go into doing this.
That yeah, sometimes.
When I get home, I go, oof, I ain't gotta do this no more. I bet a white person. Man, I gotta pretend. Like, why use that energy? Like, it sucks that we have to use that energy like that.
I absolutely, and I think it's I don't know. There's a lot of shame for me listening to you say that, right? What are you saying? I can't hear you.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I'm starting to cut you off, but I'm saying it's everyone. We all do it.
You do it. Black people do it all the time, every day, throughout the day. But
no,
we don't.
No, yes.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not. It's not the same. It's not the same.
Okay.
Make sure I'm making it very clear. It is not the same pain. You're not suffering anything. Like, people are not suffering from this. They're not being viewed as, at least in the greater society. They're not, you know what I'm saying?
So yeah.
But it's not the same. But it, like I said, it's just that same energy that I wish you could just reverse.
Right. And we wish we could put that energy towards something else.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you just think about what, I don't know. I don't want to sound like a Pollyanna about this, but I do think energy is really important, right? And what is, when you have to put so much energy into that kind of, I don't know, how would you describe it? Like, do you feel like you always have your guard up or you're always on alert or how would, can you talk about that?
I'm really aware of my surroundings.
Okay.
I know that I have to, like, here's an example. When I go out up north, if I, back pre-COVID, I went out up north and I was wearing Jordans. Like clubs or bars won't allow you to come into the establishment with Jordans on.
And okay. Just going to stop you for up. So you're in Chicago. So up north is the north side of Chicago.
North side of Chicago. Right.
Is so that a white side of Chicago?
More white. Definitely more white.
Okay.
More of where the going out scene is for.
Anyone. Okay. People your age. Yeah. Right.
So a lot of places would be like, no Jordans.
Right? I'm sorry. I'm too old to even understand that. Well, I don't know what Jordans are, but why in
Michael Jordan?
Right. So why wouldn't?
Because they go. Black people wear Jordans.
And yeah.
It's just saying they don't want black people here. It's like no Jordans. No, like when there's a dress code.
Okay.
Right. So like
they make it the dress code. They call it the dress code. And but that, you call it the black code.
Right. And so it's like it's basically saying we don't want black people here.
Right.
Right. So, no Tim's, no, like, and things that I wear, things that my friends wear that are, right? No, not in here. So you gotta dress like the people who are right to be welcomed in this establishment, to be served here.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen white people with Jordans get in bars.
Right.
In places that I couldn't get into.
Wow.
So like, yeah. That's how it's done here. And it's so blatant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not even subtle.
No, it's not. It's not.
Right. Okay.
So that's like one example I feel like that I can think of off the top of my head real quick. But it's just like, it's something you don't turn off. Like, I'm constantly aware of how I, like, it could be someone that you see at a store when you're walking down the street. And I do the same way. You try to be, hello, but it's still like someone's, it's so, for some people, it's just so natural for them to ignore, because you can live downtown, you can live on the north side, you can live someplace where there probably is not a lot of black people living there. So this is not your world. So when this come up, you're like, well, it's just like I did. It's you can easily not, you can pretend like you not know, but you do know, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're just doing, you're avoiding it in a different way.
Yeah. And I've been thinking about that as I've been doing this series as, it is still possible in America to live to go to an all white school, to live in an all white neighborhood, to work in an all white establishment, to have almost zero contact with black people. That doesn't really explain, cultural norms and stereotypes and, ideas through the media. You don't have to really have a lot of contact to not live by those stereotypes, but it is possible and to really reduce your contact. And I think just expands your ignorance and it allows you to make assumptions based on very little information. You know, we were talking about, go ahead.
No, you're right. It allows you to make assumptions. It allows you to also, it allows for conversations that may take place in your space where if it's about people of color, it's black, about black people, it's about Mexican people. It's about someone that doesn't look like you, it allows for conversations for no one to justify, like there's no voice there.
Right.
You're only surrounded by white people who only have the white experience, that only have the know of if you just work hard and pull up your bootstraps type, like if you just, like it's it, all the, if you can, if you can suppress everything else, it can look, you're thinking, well, this is what I know.
Right. It worked for me.
Worked for my dad, worked for my uncles, worked for my aunts. Okay. This is what I know.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't have a conversation with someone else, then you don't know.
Yeah.
You can't have a conversation.
You were saying, that you never leave your identity at home. And I think the counterpart for white people is that I don't have to think about my identity. I think as a woman, there are places and spaces where I bring that awareness of my vulnerability as a woman into the space, but I don't, and it is exhausting, but I don't think, but it's not the same thing, because there are plenty of spaces where that's not a primary thought that I have in order to protect myself, to be on guard, et cetera. So I'm guessing that a challenging thing then is meeting new people, new white people anyway. And so, you know, what do you, how do you know when you are in a space with someone that you feel you can trust, that you can not be so guarded or not be so on high alert?
I think a lot of the white people like that I know, like, and I think that just in, from me having, you knowing me, and one, from me being me, but also having the background of growing up with, like I said, I grew up with white people. I grew up with black people. I grew up with Asian people. I grew up seeing things at an early age, going, even from within people's homes, that I'm like, ooh, I couldn't do this in my household.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying I've been to every, like you're saying, like, I don't even know people.
Right.
Right. So just like the conversation that I had, the way you can talk to your parent, like, mm-hmm. you start to learn these little details early on. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the people that I know really closely are people that I grew up with.
Right. Right?
And so when I meet new people, right, if I'm meeting white people growing up now, and I hear something out of pocket.
And what is, and I know what the expression means, but what's an example of an out of pocket?
Just like, what's a good example? I'm trying to think of anything recently that I've heard. Like, black people should just stop, or just, you know, like, it's like undertoned things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I walked in on a, where was I? I was on a job recently doing a video shoot. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, these are my friends by any means. These
right.
were people I was on a video shoot doing, and they were right. talking about the George Floyd shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like four or five, like, blue collar white guys taking their mm-hmm. break. I think they maybe had just seen the video or were discussing it okay. or something like that. Mm-hmm. And when I walked in, the whole attitude changed.
Oh.
Because they were right. It was just like, oh, we were talking about church. Like, it was like, nah, like, it was like, he shouldn't been going for the, you know, it was like, oh, well, like, blaming excuses for what this officer had done.
Oh.
Like, it was, he didn't know. It was, he couldn't, you know, he was, right, exactly.
Oh.
And then when I walked in, the whole conversation, and I'm with the other, and I'm not like, and I'm just with my team doing this video.
Right. Right.
And them doing the stuff.
Yeah.
Even as we're walking up, what the conversation is.
Mm-hmm.
How the conversation just kind of just faded into, all right, let's get back to work. Like,
okay.
So, and that's not necessarily personal.
Right.
You're saying, like, if this is what I can hear you saying in front of my face, mm-hmm. I can only imagine what you will say when I'm not there, or when someone right. color is not around. Right.
Right.
And those conversations are the ones that you think about and you go, if, like, you don't want to know, but at the same time, you do want to know what people really have to say.
Mm-hmm.
But they feel like, and it's like either on one side or the other nowadays. And those inner conversations are so suppressed. They're online now.
Like, right.
You have at home. You can just read any comments on anything racial on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
They're open. It's not hidden.
No. It's anonymous, but it's not hidden.
Right.
Right. And I think that's another really great example of the kind of energy burden that Black people face in interpersonal relationships.
And I think,
you know, oh, go ahead.
No. Just, and when people I meet, and I think it's more of like if you know, if not just saying you can relate, right? Mm-hmm. You're not saying that you're able to relate, but you're able to understand, or you have, like, you can, or you. I think more so the people I really connect with are people that had, like, grown up around other Black people. So they understand mm-hmm. certain things, mm-hmm. right? And so the people that, like, even that I met through Fulbright, or have just even in my adult life now that I've become friends with, are people that are not afraid to have these conversations that I can be, that I can open up and be fully transparent
mm-hmm.
with.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't do that with you, then I can't. Then what's the purpose of this friendship? If
right.
we just open, honest about each other, and
right.
and maybe our differences, right?
Right.
Like, if you're too you're afraid of being looked at a certain way, or don't want to be mistook, or too afraid to even have the conversation.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody recently who said he realized, an African-American man, and he said he realized that sometimes he had to start the conversation, and in a way it gave other people, white people, permission to join the conversation and to, you know, participate. So do you feel, I don't know, how do you interact with white people that you're getting to know in a way that, right. I don't know, do you want them to start the conversation? Do you start the conversation? What do you think?
I work, and the thing is, like, and I work around like a lot of kids, right?
Right.
And so it gets to the point where it's, I think now, I've never had a problem with children mm-hmm. in these conversations. I think now kids are growing up and they're having these conversations at home, right? And
right.
So we talk about things very open and honest, and that's really cool, which I like to do with the kids, even among the kids that I was teaching last year,
mm-hmm.
or the kids that I'm teaching in this pod now.
Right.
That when we talk about race, we can talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Like, what do the kids want to talk about?
We haven't really, it's part of our social study, or at least their social studies experience that I'll be helping with. I'll be talking about some of Black history and Black Lives Matter and things that are going on right now and this election and the conversations that they may be hearing and not understanding what people are saying or mm-hmm. the things people are saying, they don't, you know, so
yeah.
we're being fully open.
With okay. this.
And so these kids are aware too.
Oh yeah.
So
great.
Try to, I mean, if these kids can be aware, there's no excuse for an adult in America. Not
yeah.
as much as I say it's no excuse, people will cover their, like they will pretend like they don't know so hard.
Yeah.
To just accept it amongst another group of people that think it doesn't exist.
You know, I started teaching 25, well, maybe, I guess more than 25 years ago. And when I was first teaching, I remember students, you know, who then, like in their early 20s or late teens, saying, well, my grandparents, but you know, it's a generational thing. And I think, to be blunt, those people are dead. So what's our excuse now? Because we used to make an excuse for the elderly and you know, yeah, those people are dead. So what's our excuse now for it still being a problem?
That's a real solid point.
Yeah.
Are we still holding on to values that our great, great, great ancestors held on to about a view of a certain group of people?
Right.
We still hold on to these. And it's the fear of not being accepted. Like, it's the shelter. It's like, I can, you're stronger with numbers, right? So
right.
if I don't fully agree, I can see why people act the way they act or who are so anti Black Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter, right? Like people
mm-hmm.
who refuse to admit to like even understanding or willing to understand
mm-hmm.
instead of just attacking,
mm-hmm.
being defensive, because if you're not included in that group, you're one of them. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Your view is, you know, whatever.
Huh. So you think people are sort of still protecting themselves in ways by staying, yeah, in a particular group. Yeah. And kind of the illusion you can stay that way for the rest of your life and be okay.
Right. But it'll protect you.
Yeah. Yeah.
To help you when in a time of need, when something happens.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think I just keep thinking about the whole use of energy, just the incredible amount of energy that's used for an African-American person to stay safe and emotionally and mentally whole in this society. Unbelievable.
And to stay sane.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So like, can I go back to when you see somebody cross the street, you know, when I work with, you know, we work together and you know that I concern myself with how people, their inner dialogue, right? So when you see somebody react to you that way, how do you not take that in and make that be about you? Like, how do you keep yourself whole in that moment and not feel less than?
Yell something out or yell like, you know, to start something or to be like, hey, I saw what you just did. Like, I'm aware of it. Like, how do I...
Do you?
I have done that before.
Uh-huh.
I didn't do it. And I don't often, I know, and I think that's just, I notice more than I say.
Right.
right? So if someone does something to me in that type of matter, as little as in, if unless it's something that I'm like, oh no, we're here, because it happens so much every day. If I addressed every single one, I would have nothing left for me.
Right.
Pick and choose what I'm like. All right, this is, or like even if I know the situation I'm walking into,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm like, oh, this is where this is going to be for me right here. If it, let it be a job, let it be a competition, let it be getting certain, like, can I get that table at that, on this side of the restaurant? Oh, it's already reserved. And see someone else come in and get that table that you asked for, right? Uh-huh. Oh, no, I need to talk to your manager right now. Like, it's that, those are the type of ones that it's just like, I'm not going to be sit here and blatantly in my face
mm-hmm.
treated like this.
Yeah.
Right?
But, you know, I just want to say, okay, so that's such a great example. You know, when I'm in a restaurant, and not that it's been ages, right? But when we used to go to restaurants, I can think about, let's say I get a dinner and I don't like it and it's, or something wrong with it. You know, there's a level of adrenaline that starts to course through me when I have to say to a server, there's a problem. Or, and so if I'm imagining being in a situation where I'm going to say to a server, the host, I need to see your manager. I know that my heart's pounding, my adrenaline is going. And I think to imagine doing that and facing that question, am I going to use my energy this way over and over and over again? You know, is it worth it this time? Is it not worth it this time? Do I let it go? Do I address it? Courtney, it's infuriating to imagine having to live that way day in and day out. It just makes me angry. Just really angry.
And it's like, as much as it's like, it's so, for me and other Black people and people, it's a part of our existence.
Right. It's routine.
It's routine.
Oh.
And that's why it's so like when that happened last night when they mm-hmm. crossed the street. It was such a routine where it was just like, I don't even have the energy at this point to
right.
even. It's just like, it's because it's going to happen again. It's not right. going to happen.
Right.
That's the thing that has to happen from within inside them. I can't. Mm-hmm. It's not going to, because I saw it. They saw it too, but they did it though. They
right.
acted upon it to right. move a certain way. Just how I have to make sure I have to move from the defense.
Right.
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 If no one's attacking me, I don't have to move anywhere.
Right. Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because my experience of you is is as such an open-hearted person. So to, and a person who's willing to be vulnerable and allow himself to be vulnerable. So to hear you talking about this and to imagine the amount of energy you have to spend really in that kind of either, do you feel like you walk through the world with your guard up?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's no matter if I'm home or abroad, I'm aware and I'm walking with my guard up.
Mm-hmm.
There have been instances where I get a moment of that, of just that moment of peace.
Right.
But then something happens and it kicks right back in.
Right.
And I think as much as I've like traveled,
mm-hmm.
right, it's typically, it's funny because it's like, it's usually when I'm away from my home,
mm-hmm.
my home, where I'm supposed to feel the most comfortable.
Right.
I'm supposed to feel the most safe,
mm-hmm.
the most secure. But I feel less of that in my own home than I do in any other country I may travel to.
Oh.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah. And then I think, you know, I kind of imagine you going home and like literally to your home where you live and closing the door, and that there's peace in that. But then you turn on the television and you see
right.
what's happening, and there's not even peace at home then in some ways.
It's not, and it's nowhere, and it's all over this country.
Right.
Right. So it's not like it's just like, oh, it's just this area. Oh. It's the country.
Oh yeah. You live in Chicago and you see
right.
it every day. You experience it every day. The great North.
See that have just have never been here, but will take what they see on television or what they heard or from the one time they were in Chicago
mm-hmm.
of what they think about Black people, what they think about police, what they think about what's going on in the world. And they have never walked or tried to listen to someone that was Black that had to walk in those same shoes or walk in those shoes that they don't want to take 2 seconds to acknowledge even exist.
Right. Mm-hmm. Huh.
It's like, it just doesn't turn off.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. just, I've never turned it off. You can't turn it off. Like I said, it's still, when I'm abroad, it's still on by any means. I got to make sure I'm aware of, I don't know what's going
right.
on. I'm aware of things.
Right.
It's fully on when I'm here. When I'm
right. Home. Always. Right. Okay. Hey, Courtney, let's take a break.
Yeah.
Okay. And when we come back, we'll keep talking about this. And so folks, you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I hope you'll join us after the break.
Get empowered.
I have had such a good time on Tales from the Merworld Radio. It has been an opportunity for me to expand myself so dramatically and become much braver in my voice to speak about the things that I'm passionate about that are a little bit out there. Your staff is amazing. Olivia is amazing. Jessica, everybody. Anytime I need anything, they show up right away. So thank you for having such an amazing team that is allowing me this platform to do what Spirit wants me to do.
Inspire, create, empower, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I'm here with my guest, Courtney Hill. Courtney is a videographer and a teacher in Chicago, Illinois. Courtney was on the show a few weeks ago when we talked about his incredible experiences teaching abroad and working and studying abroad, but also his work as a videographer. And after the show, we decided we wanted to come back and have a follow-up conversation to talk more directly about his experiences as a Black man in America, as a native of Chicago who lives there now, what his life has been like, what his experiences have been like, so that he's part of my Voices Project and bringing for white people conscious awareness to our deeply held beliefs about white racial superiority, hearing counter narratives from people beyond what we see in the media to get a better sense of people's lives so that we can feed our minds with reality rather than just mediated images that are packaged for us. And also, I'm hoping for Black, Indigenous people of color who are listening, that they're hearing from people who look like them, who speak like them, who have experiences like their experiences. So, Courtney, thanks for being here today. I've really appreciated our conversation.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about earlier was some of the ways that you make sense of what it means to be a Black man in America and the challenges. And you said, and that this was interesting to me, that humor has been really an important part of your life, that it's been actually kind of you talked to us about what role has that played in your life?
Humor, like comedy, stand-up comedy, I think has gotten me through, like, is music helps people get through troubling times.
Uh-huh.
Comedy has helped me get to where I am now.
Really?
Yeah. Like, comedy is what I'll listen to before bed. Just stand-up comedy.
Really? Oh.
I used to go to, like, people listen to music to fall asleep.
Uh-huh.
I put on stand-up comedy to fall asleep.
Really? Okay, that's new to me. That's cool.
I used to put on any and everything that I could find.
Mm-hmm.
Or even comedians that I really like, that I'd, like, re-listen to their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think comedy is, it's pain. Like, it's suffering. It's hard times. It's hard is hard stuff to talk about, right? And it's or things that you that are not talked about, or things that you shouldn't talk about. You know, comedy can be is so many things, mm-hmm. but I learned a lot about race relations through comedy.
Okay.
People like Dave Chappelle, Richard Pryor, mm-hmm. George Carlin, like these are heroes that I look up to in the sense of being honest, being mm-hmm. vocal, being connecting dots. Right? And that's such a real cool thing is when you connect the dots about something, or being able to take something that is maybe taboo or things that are there in the room and being able to discuss them, talk about them on stage in front of people that yeah. are like, everyone's thinking it, but no one's saying it but that person on stage.
Yeah.
Right. We all know like that's the one thing that like, so comedy has helped me relate to, or helped me understand my blackness in America. Right. When it comes to like just different jokes that I've heard mm-hmm. a lot. But yeah, I'm trying to like think of one off the top of my head as we discuss it. But I think the more we talk about it, the one will come up and I go, oh, there's this joke that so-and-so says.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a story, or I guess a joke that Wanda Sykes tells about, you know.
Oh, yeah. Wanda Sykes is a joke about just the perception.
Like, right.
It was white perception. And it's like, you can see a white man running down the street with a ski mask on and a money bag with money flying out like it's a cartoon character. And someone can look at him and go, huh, he must be trying to make it to the bank before they close. You know, it's just like,
right.
The things that would not be perceived the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah. And you told me that I'd heard that one before. I really love Wanda Sykes. And, but it made me think about, you know, those differences and experiences. Like I can walk into a store that I think is kind of out of my price range, or that I walk into a store that's in my price range, but maybe I'm not dressed very well because we dress kind of sloppily when we travel, my partner and I. I have had the experience of somebody working in the store look at me like, you don't belong here. But I have never in my life thought that that person imagined I was going to steal something. I have never had that person follow me through the store. And I think, yeah, I mean, to me, that's the illustration that Sykes has in that joke. Yeah.
Right. Like it's, and we're all aware of it too.
Right. Right. That's yes.
Not, it's not like it's a hidden secret. We can all sit and if everyone's laughing, that means everyone understood.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's a great point.
And that's where comedy is such an important part, is like, that's like the only place I can think of. I don't even know now. I think now definitely, but like comedy's changing so much.
Yeah.
I think people are being called out a lot more mm-hmm. now that wouldn't be called out beforehand, in the sense of just like comedians could just be comedians, right? And now they're worried about their things that they're talking about. But I think that's exactly the case, where it's just like, when we hear everyone laughing, that means understand. It's understood.
Recognized.
Agree that this is funny for this reason, because we know what it means or the reality of it.
Right. So that the white person in the audience who laughs uproariously gets it, knows it's true, and then walks outside and says, I don't see color. I don't see race.
Right.
I don't think there's any such thing as systemic racism.
That's the joke.
Right. And if you really believed those things, you wouldn't get the joke.
Exactly.
Right. Right. Oh, that's Okay. I keep thinking about you going to sleep listening to comedy, and that there's something soothing about that.
It helps me as I connect the dots.
Right. That's so cool.
I grow up, and as I get older, and I'm like, okay, what are the things that I have noticed from my experiences in the world mm-hmm. as being a black man in this world mm-hmm. on the ways that I'm treated mm-hmm. and how I'm treated differently in certain places.
Right.
Right, and how people approach me and how people will address me and talk to me or be or when I walk down the street, they'll look at me in a certain way. Or if I go into a store, mm-hmm. how they'll treat me, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, Dave Chappelle's got a really good joke about that, where he walked to this restaurant in the South, and it was just like, I'll have, and the guy goes, the chicken. And he's just like, what the fuck? That was racist. And so, I don't know, I'm sorry if I couldn't say that, but it was just like, that's the joke. Like, that's one of my favorite jokes. Because he's like, I did want it, but... You knew that though. It's just like, it's the funny, it's like, that's the reality of like two people who don't know each other.
Right.
But can understand each other without having to say it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like but being able to express it in a way.
Right. Yeah. And if I'm following you, so that for Chappelle, yes, he did want the chicken, but he doesn't want people to make assumptions about what he wants to eat just on the basis of his race.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, none of us really want people to make assumptions about us based on something that's kind of arbitrary.
Black people are different. That we don't all have the same thing. We all may share similar experiences with certain things, but we all have to walk different shoes in this world. But we're all viewed, you know? Like, we have to go through our different experiences no matter where we are.
Yeah.
There's a comedian I listen to a lot who is, his name is Patrice O'Neill. He's passed away, but he has a lot of bits of just growing up in Boston, right? Oh. He grew up in Boston in like the 80s or the 70s. And he talks about, in a lot of his old radio show, he talks about his, like the passive aggressiveness that Boston has towards black people.
Oh, okay.
So, like, listening to his stories about growing up in Boston.
Right.
Right. And being accused of things or having people just pass him on the street like he didn't exist. And these are things that he didn't understand as a kid, but as he got older, he started to understand a lot better.
Right.
Or he did understand them, but it was just like listening to his stories about what it was like growing up in Boston makes me like, to kind of go, how is that similar or different to my black experience in Chicago?
Right.
Or someone else is in LA. Or like, that's why, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's what one of the things you point to with this that I think is so critical and is so hard for white people to hold on to is that the incredible diversity of experience among black people, which is only logical just because just as there's incredible diversity among the experiences of white people. But what black people in America tend to have in common is how they are treated by white people.
Which is universal. It was universal.
Yeah.
And it was like, if that's universal, how is it still not gotten?
Right.
Not as common as it is. How is it still like, oh, I see what they like.
Right.
It's like a veil that's made of steel or something. As thin as it is, as it's right there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's, I think that's really an important point that you're making and that we as white people tend to overlook is that it is so painfully, and I use the word intentionally, it is painfully obvious if you're African-American. It is painfully obvious. And you can't ignore it. But I can. I can choose to ignore it if I want to. And that's
black people get through it. And I think that's why I listen to a lot of this, like the comedy or like, is they make fun of it.
Right.
Like, and that's my way of coping with it.
Yeah.
Is through laughing about it, laughing at people about it, laughing at the situation itself. Mm-hmm. And that's what helps me because you could turn anger into hate. I mean, you could turn anger into, you know, like, it's just like I could sit there with that angerness and let it build up inside of me. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, like the energy, I have nothing left then.
Right.
But to making someone else aware of it, mm-hmm. or connecting the dots, right? When you can help someone else connect the dots and see it in a different light, then you're doing something, I feel like.
Yeah.
That starts the conversation. And I think a lot of the things like you were asking me about, like people who I am close with now, is that, or white people that I'm close with, in a lot of ways, we can talk about things in this comedic way.
Right.
Not black. Like if you understand comedy like I do, understand comedy in general, or at least the things that I can listen to, then I think that, like, for me, it's like, okay, we can laugh at this because we both understand.
Yeah. Right. And we both understand where the other person's coming from.
Exactly.
Yeah. Courtney, as usual with you, time flies. but I am so grateful to you for having this conversation with me today. Folks, if you would like more information about Courtney's work as a videographer, go to CourtneyHill.com. It's at the bottom of your screen. And so I hope you'll come back again. I think we should keep having this conversation. Okay. So anything, any final thought? We might not have time, but you go ahead.
No, just thank you. I think after our first conversation that we had, and we talked on the phone, and then even talking on the phone prior to this one, mm-hmm. I really felt like I was, as much as we talk about vulnerability in the situation, as comfortable as I am with you, I'm being really vulnerable right now.
I know.
And it feels good. And I need to have this type of conversation. And not saying I'm not having these conversations, right? Maybe I need to be having them more with other people who are trying to have, you get what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Like, if that first conversation was more about me, this one was, I wanted to make sure I went deeper on the subject matter that was there I'm like talking over myself now.
You're but fine.
What I wanted to say is I feel good now. I feel really good. I feel like was like those questions or the answers that I might have danced over, mm-hmm. like I said in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that this time. Like, I'm really trying to, and I want to make it as comfortable. It's like, no, it's okay to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is.
Bro.
Yeah.
Bro, and I have to remind myself that too.
Right.
I don't want to offend anyone, but no, you got to offend somebody to get to understand somebody.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being here today.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, folks, for listening to Transfer for Nut to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. See you next week. You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela McGuire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, McGuireLifeCoach.com. That's McGuireLifeCoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.